Thank you for joining us for this episode of Talking with Religious Historians. This is a short-form episode of our regular Ecclesiastical History Society podcast, wherein we talk to established religious historians to find out more about their careers and what advice they would give early career researchers. I'm your host, Dr. Emily Betts, a historian of early modern British medicine and religion. Thank you for joining us today. We are happy to welcome Professor David Maxwell on this episode of Talking with Religious Historians. Professor Maxwell is Dixie Professor of Ecclesiastical History at the University of Cambridge. His research focuses on African Christianity and mission history in colonial and post-colonial settings. His first monograph considered the religious encounter in Zimbabwe, while his second book was the history of a Southern African transnational Pentecostal movement. His most recent book, Religious Entanglements, published in 2022, examines missionary and African contributions to the creation of so-called colonial knowledge in Belgian Congo and the Democratic Republic of the Congo. Professor Maxwell, thank you for joining us on the EHS podcast today.
Thank you for the invitation.
It's wonderful to have you on. And I would like to start by asking you to just discuss your current role as Dixie Professor of Ecclesiastical History at Cambridge.
Okay, thanks. So I'm situated in the Faculty of History. People often assume I'm in Divinity, but I have an adjunct role in Divinity. And I'm also, because I'm an Africanist, I also am involved in the programme of the Centre of African Studies and University of Cambridge. So I sort of have three different bases. And sometimes I'm quite stretched when it comes to teaching. But most of my teaching takes place within the Faculty of History, and I contribute to very broad lecture surveys in the first year on world history and African history. And often I get to give the religious lecture on the history of Christian missions or the history of global Pentecostalism. And then I use my expertise more in my special subjects. So I've taught special subjects to third year historians, undergraduates, on the religious encounter in Belgian Congo. And now I'm teaching one on religion and nationalism in the making of Zimbabwe. It's a sort of very contemporary special subject. And then I teach at master's level. I teach with a colleague in Divinity, and we draw students from across the university, from world history, African studies, and modern European history, Divinity. And that's more of a sort of source-based paper on African Christianity and politics. And we look at missionary periodicals, missionary sources, missionary ethnographies, but also African developed sources such as African canonical histories. And then finally, I teach enormously widely, supervise enormously widely at doctoral level. So supervised very interesting dissertations on Presbyterianism and the rise of the public sphere in Brazil, homosexuality and the Anglican Church in Rwanda, on Kikuyu masculinities and the Church of Scotland mission, on the civil war in Sudan and the Anglican Church, on London Missionary Society and the history of print. So quite challenging but fascinating doctoral research to supervise. And then I get to do mundane admin things as well, because I'm fairly senior. I often get a big job. So I've been chair of exam boards. The last 2 years I've done promotions in the faculty, and now I'm director of research. And then finally, many of us are involved in our colleges in Cambridge, and I'm actively involved as a director of studies. I help out, appoint research fellows, and I'm also involved in the chapel. I've even been involved in appointing clerics to our college livings. The college has about 20 livings it's responsible for, and I've even been involved in that process. So I get stretched and I get fairly well used.
It sounds like you're a very busy man.
Yes, I am. Sometimes I think a bit too busy, but it's challenging and it's generally fun.
It sounds fascinating. And I would actually like to learn a bit more about your recent published research, which was your book that came out in 2022 called Religious Entanglements. Can you tell us a bit more about that?
Sure, thank you. So that's a book published by the University of Wisconsin Press, and the easiest way to buy it is going to their website and University of Wisconsin. The book examines two issues of great sort of historical and contemporary interest. The first, which is prompted by waves of human migration in the 20th and 21st century, and then more recently by globalization, is the issue of cultural exchange or cultural encounter. And the second one, prompted by the rise of the information society, is the history of knowledge creation. And entanglement is the sort of frame that holds those two themes together. Entanglement sums up this sort of notion of knotty, uneven, multi-stranded entanglement of missionaries and African Christians and states and societies. And the basic premise of the book is that it's become apparent in the last two or three decades that many of our museum collections were put together by missionaries. They also helped curate or put together zoos and botanical gardens. They wrote ethnography, they founded some of the first anthropological journals, and they did great linguistic work, particularly German missionaries. And they were involved in all sorts of hard and soft sciences. They did meteorology and paleontology and hydrology. So, I mean, this is not entirely new. We're sort of aware that many Anglican clerics in the 19th century had these sorts of sidelines, as they did in many other countries. So missionaries did a great deal of scientific work, and the book's about that. But it's also apparent that missionaries didn't do this work, didn't just produce this work on their own, and that Africans were intimately involved in these projects. So I write about African evangelists, catechists, translators, porters, converts, and I try and reconstruct knowledge pathways showing how they influence texts, collections, missionary discourses, how they disagreed with missionaries, they challenged missionary presuppositions, they gave missionaries important connections, and they challenged prejudices. And then I'm interested in how Africans use that knowledge to create or to create custom, to challenge custom, to create ethnic identities, and to create ethno-philosophies. So that's what that book is about. And It was great fun to write, but a very, very difficult book to write because it involved multi-sited research, probably about 8 or 9 different archives and fieldwork. I was pleased to sort of finish it and bring it into being last year.
That sounds so interesting. And I will make sure to link your book so people can check it out.
Great, thanks very much. And it's coming out in the paperback. There's a cheaper paperback version, I might add. As you know, the hardback copy that goes to libraries is often very expensive, but they have quickly brought out an affordable paperback.
Oh, that's $30. Fantastic. Wonderful. Okay, so I will make sure to add that. Thank you for telling us about that. And what's next for you? What are you researching now?
So Democratic Republic of Congo is quite a difficult place to operate in, but very challenging environment. And having spent about 15 years working on the DRC, decided to return to Zimbabwe. And I'm working on a new project called Church and Civil Society in Zimbabwe. It's a broad synoptic book. It's subtitled From Communities of Believers to Communities of Opinion. And it's really about how religious culture and theology shape morality, rights, obligations, political culture in Zimbabwe. And I'm going to do case studies. I'm going to write about the three main church councils, the Evangelical Fellowship, the more liberal Zimbabwe Council of Churches, and the Roman Catholic Bishops Conference, and think about how these bodies, along with three case studies of denominations, have shaped ideas of governance. And it's got a strong collaborative element. So I'm working very closely with colleagues at the University of Zimbabwe, particularly a colleague called Manetsi Ruzivo. And together we recently convened a conference, about 12 days ago, in fact, which brought all the church councils together and encouraged church leaders and civil society members, stakeholders and academics to think about how the churches have responded to key transitions in Zimbabwe's 40 years of independence, the first decade, what's known as the crisis 2000 to 2008, when there was a great deal of political violence and socioeconomic collapse. And then more recently, the coup, which took place in 2017. And what we were trying to do there is, well, I mean, it was just trying to encourage discussion and debate and perhaps a publication And the discussions took place in a very timely moment, just in the wake of extremely flawed elections in Zimbabwe. So there was a kind of buzz and a sort of importance about that conference, which when it took place.
I'd be really interested to keep an eye out for your publications on this and be able to share this with the Ecclesiastical History Society, because I think it's very timely and very important.
Thanks. It's going to be an interesting book. There'll be some academic essays in the book, but also essays by stakeholders, which probably won't have footnotes or normal kind of academic references. There will be more sort of people's impressions and experiences, but I think that'll be just as worthwhile.
That sounds absolutely wonderful. And you've talked actually a bit so far about different collaborations that you've had, and that leads me to my next question, where I want to kind of pick your brain about your career so far. And I know you've spent most of your career in two institutions, at Keele University and at Cambridge, but you've also taught as a visiting fellow in several other institutions. And we've got a list here. You've got the University of Western Australia, Basel University, Leipzig University, where I went as well, that's cool, and the University of Copenhagen. And I was just wondering, what did you learn from this variety of institutions?
It's very useful teaching elsewhere. I mean, I think it alerts you to the sort of range of students out there and their very different sets of experiences and needs. And it's an opportunity for you to improve on your own understanding of teaching and student learning. And so to give you some examples, teaching in Australia, one becomes aware that Australian history departments often package their teaching in nice, well-produced booklets, you know, sets of readings, questions, commentaries. A great deal of thought has gone into preparing those booklets, and using them helps you frame your own material in a far sharper way. You go back to your own preparation and think much more clearly about the questions you're going to ask and the material you're going to set. And of course, you can nick that material and use it in your own papers. So I found that teaching in Australia very, very useful, and picked up quite a lot of that kind of material, which sits on my shelves and is deployed at certain times. But it's also an opportunity to test your own practices. And you mentioned Leipzig, and I had a great opportunity to test what I do quite often at Leipzig. I mean, lots and lots of history departments in this country, particularly Keele and Cambridge, place a great emphasis on studying short source extracts. We call them gobbets at Cambridge, and we call them gobbets at Keele. And you think about a little paragraph of source or a cartoon or a photograph, and you think about them in terms of their producer, their author, their genre, their audience, their purpose. And I ran a session on source extracts with postgrads at University of Leipzig, and they really enjoyed it. They hadn't done anything like that before in the unit I was teaching in, and they were very appreciative, and it just brought home to me how valuable that is. I mean, another useful aspect of teaching elsewhere, which has been very helpful to me, is that as someone in area studies, I've been able to test my own research in the countries I'm researching. So I've given presentations in Bible colleges and seminaries and institutes in the Democratic Republic of Congo and in Zimbabwe. And it's been very useful in reducing the gap between Europeans or Westerners producing, writing about the African past and Africans producing their own past. It gives you a sense of your own contextualization within the flow of the African past. And I think that's very important. You get a sense of local passions and interests, and you can see whether your own material is resonating with those. And also, I think what's been very rewarding is say giving a presentation, and then this descendant of someone you've been writing about or from a church or movement you've been writing about comes up to you and says, oh, I know something about this, and they share their impressions with you, and that's incredibly rewarding.
That does sound rewarding. I'm sure puts your research into a whole different lens when you're there. So it does sound like working at these different institutions had a large impact on your career. Is this something that you would recommend that ECRs try to work at several different universities?
Yeah, I think the key is to get a permanent job if you're an early career scholar or researcher. I mean, I think talking to younger colleagues, career younger colleagues around Cambridge, it can be demoralizing to have a sequence of short-term contracts. You know, you can't get on with your own research. And sometimes they're very exploitative if they're not for a whole year, they're just for 9 months. You're not even paid for the summer vacation to do your own research. So, I mean, I think the key is to try and get something permanent. But once in, and that's not easy, I must say, it's tough out there. But I think once in a position, it is great to have these fellowships. I mean, first of all, they're marks of esteem. Someone else has expressed an interest in you. They've bothered to invite you and host you. So that looks good on the CV. If you're in an institution for a long time, they can stop you getting into a rut. They can refresh you. They can give you new challenges. And of course, they can expand your intellectual networks. Often the invitation comes from colleagues in the same field. And so you can create new collaborations through visiting fellowships or produce an edited collection together or a conference together. And they can facilitate access to new libraries and archives. So when I was in Western Australia, I was really delighted to discover a book which only 4 copies in the world seemed to exist, which was in the library of the University of Western Australia. And I was just absolutely delighted to be able to get a hold of that copy and note it and photocopy bits for my own research. So there were all sorts of interesting spin-offs.
That sounds great. Thank you for that. And I have one other question about a different part of your career. You've been on the editorial board for several journals, including Critical African Studies, the Journal of Ecclesiastical History, the Journal of Southern African Studies, the Journal of Religion in Africa, Social Sciences and Missions, and Studies in Christian Mission. Ooh, that is a lot. So, can you share how you became a member of these editorial boards and what advice you would give for those looking to get editorial experience?
Sure. One usually gets invited or often gets invited to be an editor or an editorial board member because of your experience and expertise. So sometimes it happens a bit later in your career, but there are fast track routes. So I was made reviews editor of Journal of Religion in Africa quite early in my career, because it's a sort of job that you give to someone with a lot of energy and time. It's suited to a young person, really. And then sometimes journals which operate as collectives are more open to career young scholars than other more established journals, which are often hierarchical. And of course, younger scholars can found their own journals. I mean, that often happens these days. And so there are various routes in for young scholars. The most significant job and the most time-consuming job is to be a journal editor. And sometimes faculties and departments these days discourage academics from taking that job on because it is so time-consuming. But the pluses are it gives you a very good sense of where your discipline, your sub-discipline is going because fresh research is coming in. And it gives you an opportunity to shape the discipline. So when I was editor of the Journal of Religion in Africa, I pushed material on Pentecostalism and new themes, or relatively new themes then, on gender and sexuality, religious print and the electronic media, the landscape and its sacralization. And then there's a kind of unexpected spin-off. I think being an editor of a journal helps with promotion because it's something that most disciplines recognize as significant. So, you know, I sat on promotions boards with scientists and they say, oh, I'll give that person a mark. They're a journal editor. You know, because in their field too, journals push forwards paradigms, they push forward research fields. And so that's often unexpected, but I think a useful spin-off. And I also think you can influence things by being an editorial board member. So I'm a member of the Journal of Ecclesiastical History editorial board, and the editors, firstly Dermot McCulloch, and then more recently James Carton Paget and Alec Ryrie, have been very happy for me to push material on Christianity in the Global South to encourage students and colleagues to submit stuff to the journal. But together we've pushed and developed this World Christianities Prize, which again encourages submissions. So it's been a pleasure to work with colleagues in the Journal of Ecclesiastical History and to try and move the journal into a space where it is receiving more stuff about the South and even from the South.
That's really helpful information. Thank you. I think sometimes when you're just starting in your career, you aren't sure exactly how the background of these things works. So that is incredibly helpful. Thank you. So I have one last question for you. What is your favorite part about being an academic?
I think I have several. I really enjoy, and throughout my career, have both Kiel and Cambridge, have really enjoyed teaching special subjects. Especially in Cambridge, you give your students your own research material. And usually they're on your own narrow research interests. And in Cambridge, we give students about 1,500 pages of printed material or 1,400 and some photographs or cartoons. And they engage with that material both in terms of source extracts and writing long essays, and they often spot things in your material that you don't spot yourself, and that can be very interesting and stimulating. And they often go away and find books, secondary literature about your material that you weren't aware of. So it's a great dialogue. You can have a great dialogue with your students about your own research. And my most recent book, I thank them for generation of students for shaping my research on Congo. In a similar manner, it's been great to supervise doctoral dissertations, to work with PhD students over a 3-4 year period to shape their questions, to help them hone their writing, to talk to them about their research. It can be absolutely fascinating. Often they do things that you would quite like to do but don't have time to do, so that's rewarding. And hopefully, if all goes well, you can start them off on their academic career, and that's very rewarding. I also enjoy archival research, finding new things in archives, unexpected things. That's always gives you a thrill. And because I'm an Africanist who does field work, I've always enjoyed meeting people in the field, doing in-depth interviews. I think back to my first book, my doctoral research. There was something magical about walking to a distant village at the base of a mountain and finding a spirit medium who would then recount to you genealogies of kings and chiefs, stories of migrations, stories about the founding of the dynasty, or oral traditions, rich, lively oral traditions. There was something very exciting about that. And lastly, I'm enjoying my current research, which is very contemporary and involves, as I said, stakeholders, civil society members, journalists, church leaders, academics who are politically involved. So that conference we organised just 12 days ago was enormously rewarding, because what it was doing was allowing stakeholders to network amongst themselves, exchange ideas, and try and think about how the church responds to flawed elections, how it responds to the current context in Zimbabwe. It was nice to be a fly on the wall at that juncture in Zimbabwe's history.
That's a lovely answer. And just thinking about this dialogue of learning, it sounds like that is really what you're passionate about. And I think all of us as historians love that. So thank you so much. It's been such a pleasure to have you on today's episode, Professor Maxwell.
Okay, it's been a pleasure to talk to you.
We'll make sure to link your book in the description of this episode. And we are very excited to see what you do next.
Thank you.